28 minutes past 9 o'clock on a Thursday morning, and time for Uncensored with Penny Faree, brought to you proudly by IPSS Electronic Security.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode of our show, where we bring the critical issues and news that is impacting the North Coast to you live from Radio Life and Style, 88 FM. Last week on Uncensored, we had a powerful conversation with two community activists from Ward 8 in Kumbongo, the very ward represented by Kwedukuza's mayor, Muzi Alingire. Now, one of them, Tammy Chilize, shared his personal account of an arrest that took place on Boxing Day, and he took us through what actually transpired in that day. And alongside him, Pilani Pitio also spoke about his experience at a recent public participation meeting held for a number of wards in Kumbongo, and this was the mayoral public participation meeting, and we unpacked a number of those issues on air, and we had a massive groundswell of response from the public. And what we have here today is a guest in studio, is chairman of the Dolphin Coast Residents and Ratepayers Association, Dion Viljoen. Welcome, Dion. Good to
morning,
have you back.
Morning, Benny. Morning, Dave. Morning to all your listeners.
Yeah. We want to just start off with, you know, from last week, Pilani said that during the mayoral Mbizo, there was a public order police, the unit that's designed for high-risk volatile scenarios at a public municipal meeting. Now, that raised important questions about the environment being created around civic engagement. Are you able to give us a little bit of information? You were personally there. You attended the meeting. Can you give us a recount of what actually transpired?
Penny, yes. I decided to go and support our members of the civil society group over there.
Yes.
They attended our Mbizo, and it was only right that we were there.
I remember, yeah.
I was there with a journalist, and had a very good turnout. They had about 400 people. But what struck me was the difference between our Mbizo and their Mbizo. When you arrive there, you see more cops than anywhere else. Yeah. There's public order policing, and these people are brought in from outside of Kwedukuza at great cost, because they're public order police.
And you know what? They just have one unit that float around Kwedukuza. Yeah. Kwedukuza.
And you had SAPS, and you had the Metro Police, and you had the bodyguards of the mayor. So, so that was the first interesting one. But I think the biggest travesty that happened during the meeting is that when it gets to question time, the mayor is firstly selective in who he recognized to speak. He's the chairman of the meeting, obviously. And he did recognize both Pilani, and he recognized Tommy, and he recognized Dan, and later Tembo and Thuli. Those are all civil society leaders. But when Pilani spoke and he said something controversial against the mayor, suddenly his microphone gets muted.
Yeah.
You see the mayor giving an instruction to the technical team to mute the microphone because he's not liking what Pilani was saying. And then the guy moving the microphone around, yeah, it gets told to skip Tommy, because he knows Tommy very well. Yeah. So although he recognized him as number four speaker, so he skipped him, he skipped Dan. And I was there with a journalist, and we had to leave by about 5 o'clock. We've been there since 2 o'clock. And I said to him, I need to leave. I gave him a lift. And the minute the two of us left, interestingly enough, about 10, 15 minutes later, the public order police actually evicts one of the civil society. They evict Temba and Thuli. Mm-hmm. So it is very evident that, number one, the nature of Mbizos and how public participation takes place on the one side of the highway versus the other side of the highway is very different.
Can you imagine a public order unit being present at our Mbizo?
At a public engagement event where the public is supposed to speak and ask questions and make comments.
And how intimidating were they? Were they like standing around the hall, or were they inside?
They were outside the hall.
Yeah.
But everybody that arrived could see them.
Yeah.
You know,
and they were fully kitted, hey? Because they were fully armed.
Yeah, they were fully kitted. Yeah. But they weren't in the hall. So there wasn't any intimidation in the hall as such. So that can continue. But yeah, the minute the cameras or the media goes, then suddenly different rules apply.
Now, when they were muting the mics, what was the atmosphere in the room? How did the public react to that?
I don't think they realized what happened.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a big hall.
Yeah.
The acoustics are bad. You need a microphone to get your voice heard.
Okay.
The other interesting thing was that we noticed that on stage were the second team, you know, the deputy directors of various departments.
They're so not the executives as
not the executives themselves, which is compared to IMBs, you know, we had the heavies there. Except obviously the mayor and the municipal manager, but apart from them, we had everybody else there. But what was also interesting is how the mayor, as the chairperson of the meeting, interrupts his own colleagues. And when they start saying things that, you know, doesn't suit him or doesn't align with the message that he wants, he interrupts them and he tells them to go and sit. And then he carries on answering the question himself.
Mm-hmm.
Or when they now have questions and these questions are being asked, then he would interrupt and he will answer the questions. So there was a controversial statement made by Polani, because Cesar Water was talking about the big problem that they have in that community, and that's illegal water connections.
Yes.
And Polani then asked the mayor, but aren't you one of the ones that is being charged for exactly the same thing? Which he is.
Yeah, there is a reference number. They took it to Caesar. They've opened up a case, and there's a reference number that was issued to that case.
Yeah, so that was obviously not what he wanted to hear, and that was the muting of the microphone. After the eviction, obviously the meeting just disappeared and dissipated.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing is that the mayor, who's supposed to be neutral in this instance, starts talking about the demarcation of wards. And he starts promising the community, the 300 people that are listening to him, that he is going to influence and change the demarcation of the various wards, because Shaka Skral's now gone MK and there's some ratepayers there. So he seems to have an issue in his mind that there's a big difference between your rights as a civil society, whether you're a ratepayer or whether you're a resident. So he feels that ratepayers should be treated separately and differently, and that residents that are not ratepayers should be treated differently. And that's a travesty. That's a travesty of justice. That's against every piece of law that we have. But he has this narrative in his head. So he's now promising that he's going to try and exclude the ratepayers into a different ward because they have different rules. So that he can consolidate the residents in a different ward for elections.
Yeah.
He does not have the power to do that. He's not able to do that. There's a whole different process. You cannot, on a public forum, as a neutral mayor, start making promises purely because it's populist, because it's suiting a narrative.
You saw him on the ground when the Sharkers Kraal by-elections took place. He was there canvassing, you know, with his party, the ANC, and he was accused, the MK accused him of using ratepayer money for that campaign, the ANC campaign, and there was a lot of campaigning. I mean, we've never seen them so active in just one particular ward. In fact, it's the first time I've ever seen a by-election so contested by the ANC, and how much actually was going on. There were people that were being fed, there was meal parcels. They even went to an old age home in Sharker's Head, and he basically spent thousands equipping them with a freezer and a whole lot of food. And Dushi Govinda, the MK candidate, he says that they've never, ever in 30 years seen ANC mayor going in
support.
There. Yeah. And you know what? Where's the accountability? I know you, you know, Polani and Tami said that they have written to all the structures. You know, trying, I mean, we've gone back in 2016, from 2016, the community in Kumbongo were already doing protests, because when they brought out the candidates who were going to be standing as ward councillors, Alingidi was one of them, and they vehemently protested. They didn't want him in the ward. There was fires burning. It actually became very volatile, and yet he was elected, and they have tried various processes, and, you know, we saw how muted their voices are.
So I think for the first time there's a total unified voice.
Yeah.
not only is civil society standing together, and remember that civil society now, as I say, CORA is a much wider
yeah.
organization.
Just tell us a little bit about it for the listeners who aren't quite sure what that means, acronym.
So CORA has been founded by DOCRA, and it stands for the Kwadakuza Organized Residents Alliance, and it includes Tinley Manor, Blythedale, Zinkwazi, but it also includes the Kwadakuza Residents Forum. It includes the Ilembe Action Movement, ICAM, and it now includes the people, the civil society in Okobongo. So suddenly you now have a collective unified voice.
Yeah, how many
I know that business is standing together. Yeah. I know that political parties are taking up this issue of the mayor. If you just have a look at some communication by two political parties in the last week, taking on aspects of the same kind of issue. We in touch with COCTA, and we've reported it there. We've even been in touch with the ANC provincial task team, the new provincial task team. We've written to them. We've told them our concerns, and they've responded to us, and they've indicated that they are investigating, information that they've got. So I think it's a matter of time. The tipping point is there. There is no ways. There was even Nazi a demonstration yesterday at Kwadakuza. So, yeah, we're at a tipping point.
Yeah.
Things need to change. My feeling is that there's a negotiation happening. What happens after the change? It's not about that change is going to happen. It is who is going to play what role after the change.
Yeah.
And it's a critical time for the largest party in the municipality at the moment. We've got an election just a year and a half away, and I think those things are going to start counting.
Yeah, the demarcation is going to be very pivotal. I mean, we're already talking about that. I just want to bring you back to what you said. I know Action SA did file they released a press statement on Tuesday in response to the episode last week, and they've called on the speaker to investigate this urgently, and they've asked them to be presented to the Rules and Ethics Committee, and also obviously the speaker, Dolly Govender, she needs to ensure transparency and accountability. And DOCRA obviously came out and responded in that. You had an open letter to the mayor, and what did you actually do? You're calling on him to step down, is that right?
Yes, we're calling on him to step down, but our letter is really addressed to the councillors of the Kwadakuza municipality, because they have the voice in council, and we know that quite a number of them are outspokenly concerned, and then there are quite a number that are quietly concerned, that are not as outspoken. So that's the only structure that could affect that change, unless the ANC's internal structure themselves are going to do that. So it depends on what their investigations are revealing. But those are the two ways that we could affect change in leadership at the municipality.
You know, I know the ANC provincial committee actually released a press release a little while ago, and I read it. They said they were going to investigate it, and they were going to come back to the public in 7 days, and then obviously nothing happened from there. So I assume there was a lot of behind the door discussions, and obviously there's a lot of factionalism as well, and to play that out publicly is obviously not going to look good on them, and especially after the previous mayor who also was asked to step down, and this has now happened. And you know what I find very just, it's so blatantly disrespectful to the ratepayers, is that he was in term. You know, he came into his term on the 5th of November, and then there was a public outrage when the numbers were released in the social platforms, and this is what started the rot, when people were seeing what him and the deputy mayor, I have to include that the deputy mayor was also involved in the car hire debacle. They incurred, in 4 months, they both incurred to the ratepayers and purse, 1 million rand car hire. That's how much it cost them, when there was three perfectly fine you know, executive cars that they could have used. So that started it. And then from there transpired that there's a massive security detail that surrounds the mayor as well. He has 10 bodyguards at his private residence guarding him 24/7 from the very community that elected him to serve them. That's what is such a paradox.
It tells you a lot. So.
And now, so my question, I'm coming to my question is, okay, you're seeing this expenditure. So I will say, who is the ED responsible? And the, you know, so community safety, they are responsible for security. So if all these guards, they would go through the executive director of community safety.
Safety and security committee.
Okay. ED and the vehicle hire, who would be responsible? That would be head of corporate services.
Yes.
So now, if he is doing this, surely executive directors who've got, this is their department, their portfolio, why didn't they red flag this? Why were they?
They have red flagged it.
Did they?
Yeah. Okay. Your problem is that the mayoral position is the number one position.
Okay.
And if you have somebody that demonstrates the kind of disrespect and verbal abuse,
Why are they putting up with that?
Yeah. They're just not standing up to it. But yeah. I must say that I've heard in a number of cases that they have stood up and have refused certain things. So refusing certain things is okay, but becoming proactive is another challenge. So there's a tremendous intimidation happening both in the council level as well as within the administrative level, which is why DACRA and CORA has gone to external agencies. So that the same way that you bring in public order police from an outside area, we've gone to what we call our bomb squad.
Yeah.
So our bomb squad is cocked up, for example.
I'm hoping they live up to this expectation.
Me too.
I'm keeping we're
following,
my eye on
we're following up on it. But, you know, NERSA, and if you look at COCTA, I mean, it's quite comprehensive. It's maladministration. Yeah. It's the fraud. It's the abuse of municipal assets and so on.
Tendering.
That's all on the list. Then you've got SIU. Yeah. Then you've got the Auditor General doing a number of stuff. And then we now know that the ANC internal structures management are fully aware and are made aware. And
but that's not just the mayor. I mean, all this you're is more governors and financial.
The outside guys, you know. So that pressure is being brought to bear.
Yeah.
It's good that the internal pressure is taking place
because
you need to have that as well. It's added when you have external pressure and this kind of interview and making it public and getting this information out there so that you have a total onslaught.
Yeah. But I'm just playing devil's advocate. He was elected in November. Now, all these things that we're looking at, those have been systematic for a number of years. You know, the financial mismanagement, the tendering, the issues with the tender process, the electricity losses. And I'm also going to just bring this in. The municipal manager, he now earns 2.2 million rand a year. That's his salary. And his bodyguarding bill costs the ratepayer as well. Now, we're going to look at the mayor. We also have to look at everyone else. That bodyguarding bill of the municipal manager costs us 2.2 million as well a year. So his salary is 2.2 average. His bodyguarding is 2.2 million. He has been...
But that is historic. So this new mayor has taken his bodyguards away and taken it to himself. Yeah.
Oh, really? Because the two
Not all of them.
Yeah.
So he still has the bodyguards, you know, some protection.
The municipal manager's two bodyguards that I know, he always is... I know them because the one is his brother and the one is his nephew. They've had that... He's had those details since he, you know, 2017.
But it's been cut back by the mayor because... He needed more.
Yeah.
So where am I going to take them? And there's not a lot of love lost between those two individuals.
Yes, I've heard. Know. And now with head of community safety, I looked at the list where there are 12 councillors that are receiving bodyguarding services, and there was no risk and threat assessment except for two which were done years ago. And I know protocol says you have to do a risk assessment every 3 months to justify it. And even the previous mayor, she's got two bodyguards. I mean, when you look at that, and then we bring in the new budget that's going to be tabled today, by the way. Today is critical on the budget. And they were looking at what sort of measures you I mean, they cut the fat. Hey? When we looked, when DOCRA as well, you at the Mbiza, you said that it's going to impact our services. What are your thoughts on that? Surely that is the first stop that should be looked at instead of cutting back critical services and projects.
So we've seen some cutbacks, which are
About them.
Which are nominal. Yeah. You know, there is a bit of a cutback on for example, electricity purchases, because we've got so many solar panels and so on, so you don't have to buy that electricity or that amount of electricity anymore. And there has been some cutback or slower increases in what we call contracted services, and the security contract sits within, you know, within that ambit. It is too little. It is late,
absolutely,
but it started.
Yeah.
So we've got to recognize that the input of CORA and DOCRA on the rates has been recognized. I'm quietly hoping that the budget does get approved today, because there is some good news in the budget as far as the rates are concerned. So we're
tell
very
us about
pleased.
Them?
Well, you know, the first thing that we argued is that there should be a zero randage increase. And the reason we did that is to make our destination more competitive from an investment point of view.
Yes.
Because you can't be increasing all the time and sit with a big rebate. So we said, come in with a zero randage, so that when you compare our destination to invest to other destinations, we are more competitive. So it took us 3 years. They accepted that, and they've now implemented that. So we said, rather reduce the rebate. But then they went very shrewdly and reduce the rebate by a massive percentage, which would have resulted in a 9.3 rates increase. And we said that's absolutely not acceptable. And we've managed to get that reduced. In the proposed budget, that is reduced. And we've said to them, you can take money from energy losses that you are going to recoup. So you don't just ask for something, you actually tell them how to finance it. And to do it, so we told them how to finance it, recommended a way forward. They've considered that way. So, yeah, there's a few tens of millions of saving for the residents coming through.
And, you know, with the electricity losses, I mean, that's crippled our budget. And
it's
our
shocking.
It's sitting at 400, you said 400 million.
I think it'll reach 400 million this year,
And, you know, we had Jarlie on the show. He's the executive director of the electricity unit. And he said they're going to be putting a task team together. And they're going to be going out in full force, tackling the illegal connections that are contributing to this loss. Have you heard anything about this? Are they on the ground? Are they taking action?
They're busy. They're taking the low-hanging fruit, which is big bulk energy buyers. And there's a lot of shenanigans happening there. I've just seen an announcement that a very credible listed company has said that they will come and assist it, come and resolve that. So that is fantastic. I'm very glad to hear that. So there are definitely some moves happening on the big electricity, the bulk buyers. We all like to default to the illegal connections, and yes, it's a problem, but it's a drop in the ocean. People that are in townships charge their phones and maybe run a Globe. And so on. That's not
400
massive.
Million.
Yeah, that's not massive electricity. But I think the biggest thing is, Penny, when we got NERSA, last time NERSA was here was in 2014 to come and investigate. And when we eventually got them around the table, and what we didn't realize at the meeting, we thought that they were wanting to hear what our complaints were. But it turned out to be a mitigation meeting between civil society and the municipality, which was wonderful.
Yeah.
And it was chaired by NERSA. And we could really lay it on the table. And the chairperson of NERSA was horrified when we told her the electricity losses and so on. Gave specific instructions to Jali and to the municipality to do. And within 3 days, it started panning out. So we started getting the information from people that we've put PIA applications in and so on. So that investigation is about 3 weeks into it. The COCTA investigation is about 2 months. They said it'll take 3 months. So we're on them to get the various feedback.
The pressure's there, for sure.
SIU is all over the place and doing their thing. Let's see. But it's due to both media, civil society, business, politicians all getting together.
And it is. You know, it's almost like people have been complaining, but I think things only have started coming to light in the last year or so. You know, the phrase have been there, but everything, I think I always say the chickens have come home to roost, because it's just suddenly been impactful. And civil society has, you know, you've been quietly working behind the scenes, but you've been doing the work, because I know the work DOCRA has been doing, and now all of a sudden you're using a platform to show people that you are doing something. You're becoming more forceful. Yeah, you're actually demanding accountability and transparency. So I think there's a lot of positive moves happening. We are going to be keeping, this is a developing story, we're going to be keeping an eye on what has transpired. Obviously, MK has supported, also gone behind your statements, the calling for the mayor to step down, Action SA, requiring an investigation. DEA has been also very vocal. So we're going to see if there will be a motion brought forward, you know, in council, or no vote of no confidence, or if they're going to, internal structures are going to take responsibility and do the right thing. So we're going to keep everyone updated as this story continues to unfold. And we're going to maybe unpack the new budget next week.
Yes, yeah. That'll be great.
Okay. Thanks for joining me, Dion.
Welcome. Thank you, Penny. Yes. Thank you, Dave.
And you've been listening to another edition of Uncensored with Penny Faree, proudly brought to you by IPSS Electronic Security.